I will meet somebody and be like, oh my gosh, I feel super connected with this person. And when I do, it's still a choice where it's like, okay, if you pursue this, you absolutely can have a friendship or a relationship with this person, but I have to determine if that's right for me or not. So it's almost like I have open doors, you know, and I can be like, this is somebody that I'm drawn to. This is somebody that I can tell they're drawn to me. And I will know this usually before they know it about themselves. And so then it's like, well, I have to start feeding the relationship to get to that point, but then they need to feed it as well. And if they don't feed it, then it's not going to work. Science has shown us that energy exists between all forms, and sometimes that energy is positive, and sometimes it's, well, it's complicated, and it can be old. And yes, it can be problematic. Hence today's conversation about cords, contracts, and curses. Jenny and Trey give tons of specifics about what these things are, why they exist, and how to get rid of the ones that are interfering with your zen. As Trey says, this is not complicated, this is confidence. So come build up some confidence with your Light in the Fog co-hosts.
Cheers, meow meow.
Cheers.
Welcome back.
Meow, meow. Hello.
After a month of celebrating harvest and doing some more work in the space of clearing and healing, we thought that we would have another conversation about energetic ties that bind and then hopefully how to unbind them.
Yay, energy ties. Yeah, today is about cord cutting and curses, which is exciting. Two C's that I don't bring up a whole lot.
And I'm going to bring up a third C. So cords and curses and contracts, like soul contracts. Yep. Ooh la la. Which has a completely different kind of nature to them as well. So let's just dive in, shall we? So what is your understanding of cords?
So I have the pretty basic understanding that cords are energetic ties that get attached to us, whether we want them to or not, and that there are, like everything in witchcraft, they are inherently neutral and that there are good and bad cords that can get attached to you. You can put intention into sending cords out, and they are tied to your chakras from what I understand. But you also have to make sure to draw them back in if you are sending them out. They are work that I have dabbled in a little bit, especially like early witchcraft, but I haven't actually returned to it. So that's kind of why I was excited to do today's conversation.
Ooh, excellent. Right on. So I love this. I love the framing in witchcraft. Although cords are not inherently a witchy thing. They're just, right. they're actually, quantum energetic thing. But I think it's like what you said, it's like the intentions and it's the deployment and it's the recognizing when, you know, cords have been attached to you. And cords can be problematic. Have you ever had an experience where you had problematic cording?
You know, I'm just not like aware of my cords enough. So my answer is yes, probably. But did I know that it was problematic cording? Definitely not. Or at least I wasn't checking in with myself about it being that.
Right. Like it's a pretty like specific thing, you know, to go looking for. And in the spiritual realm, when we're looking to clear our space, it's, you know, it's one of a number of things that we make sure that we are dispatching. So what are cords? They're literally an energetic tie between two people. That's it. However, like you said, the cord can be a positive thing, like a mother and a kid. Man, that cord is never gonna. You could clear it like every 10 minutes if you want to, and it's still going to get reconnected because of the nature of the related, the emotional relationship, you know, having to do with that particular dynamic. But for the rest of us, we end up doing it like not really knowing that we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And we receive cords because we're not necessarily protecting our space. But, you know, again, like, so what's the problem? Like, why are cords a bummer?
Right. Well, and I also just like, I feel like they're not just necessarily connections to people, because like in my mind, you can have cord connection with anything that has those chakra energies or just energy in general. So of course, you can also get connected with bad spirits and other things that are around you. And of course, there's a bunch of stuff around us that does not have our light and love and at heart. So, you know, getting connected with those is just a funnel of bad.
It's just a funnel of bad. See, and I thought you were going to say like cord connecting with our pets. Well, yes, those two.
Those two. But,
yeah, like the master class is the fact that there's, you know, there's entities around us all the time, you know, like any list of entities. And yeah, some of them are sort of fall into our space and then there's a connection. Some of them end up with a connection because we went through their space. Like you go to a haunted house and now, you know, gosh darn it, you've got this connection to, you know, some entity that doesn't even have to leave its house, but is still connected to you. So like if you go to a haunted house and you find yourself having nightmares or just dreams in general about that space or sort of that same energetic vibe, like guess what? It's probably a cord that's attached to you. We also have like the silver cord where when we astral travel, you know, we just leave our body and go swimming around, you know, in the etheric soup. We're also really encouraged to double check the silver cord that goes from our navel, you know, in our sacral chakra or third chakra to that astral body so that it can very easily find its way back to you. You don't want your astral body to get too terribly separated from you, which is a whole other conversation, and something I really had to learn to do because I'm a natural astral traveler.
Yeah,
and I didn't have any protocols around it. I didn't have any safety measures. I certainly didn't have this great silver cord. So that concept of disassociation, yeah, there's disassociation when you have trauma, but there's also disassociation when you're not in your body, mm-hmm. and you. You're not pulling it back in, man. Get the cord and pull it back in. Okay. So we got a lot to talk about here. So the bummer about cords is they take energy. And they can actually put energy into you and your space. Mm-hmm. So when I'm doing healings on people, I'll see, you know, we just call it foreign energy, like in a chakra. And sometimes it's in, you know, just parts of the body. But most primarily, as you said, it's related to a specific chakra, the performance, like what that chakra does. And if it's muddling up your, you know, that particular chakra, like your communication chakra at your throat, your fifth chakra, then you might find yourself not being able to communicate very well. Or, you know, you get into a lot of fights with people, depending on what the energy is that's coming in. So there's all kinds of things that can interfere just from the cord. So we want to get rid of cords. Even though we recognize that our closest friends and our closest circle, those cords are going to come back. They're going to come back.
Yeah, and I guess I never thought about just like constantly wanting to clear cords as like the objective, you know, recognizing that the good ones that we need will come back. It makes sense though, because, you know, you're just clearing out everything and allowing the light and loves to come back, and the other ones hopefully not to.
Yes. And that could be the tricky thing, right? Because those cords can come back unless we do a particularly good job of clearing them and being aware of them. And then you have to like ask, oh, is this like a soul contract, which we'll get to in a minute. So question for you, have you ever had a relationship that was over, you know, friendship or romantic relationship, but like you keep thinking about them and like you, like, it's almost like they're sitting next to you, man. Like you can just feel them.
Yeah. Definitely more recently than not, and it's kind of like almost like this episode's very serendipitous timing and your spirits were communing with mine, because it's like, you know, oh, this is something that Jenny probably needs to do right now.
Yay! Well, let's do it, man. Let's do it. All right. So I think we kind of set up the basics of it. And, you know, guys, this isn't, you know, I mean, I think this existed in the space of metaphysics for a long time. But, it, you know, this is science. Like, there's actual, like, things that can, like, radar or whatever, like scanners who can see, you know, that these energy exchanges are happening. Yeah. And I love that science is now sort of catching up to all of the things that all us weirdos had been living with for a long time. Let's see. So another, okay. So clearing cords is great for just in general, like, because you want your energy to be your energy in your space. So just clearing in general, but it's also great to go looking for them, that if you're having a hard time with a specific person, you know, or like, you know, like maybe you've cast somebody for whatever reason, we don't judge, you know, you've cast them out of your life. But darn it, like, you can't stop thinking about them and it's still kind of interfering. Now, granted, this absolutely can be just trauma stuff, but chances mm-hmm. are there's a cord in there that's like tangled up. So that might be a reason to clear it. When you have a really strong romantic partnership with somebody, like, that's going to be a cord that that you can clear out just to keep it fresh. Like, you don't want a cord to get established on day one and then 20 years later, it's the same cord, because you've changed, they've changed, your relationship has changed. So part of the goal is also to keep the energy up to date and intentional, you know, that if you send out a cord to somebody, you know, you wanna be blessing that cord and giving it a light and love charge to things.
Yeah, that's a really good way to think about it. And I definitely never thought about, you know, because, like, I always just viewed cords as like, yeah, no, I mean, that's what they are. That makes sense. I was just like, you know, just attachments that get onto you and, you know, but I also didn't give it a lot of thought until now. And I never connected it with my actual thoughts about what's going on in my head. So that's interesting.
Because why would you, you know, yeah. Until somebody like mentions it, like, it's not a thing. It's not a thing, but yay, it's a thing today. So what I generally do to clear cords for myself is when I do, it should be a daily meditation, but like, I'm trying not to lie. I was obsessed and I don't have a daily meditation. But when I do, and especially when I'm working with somebody, like if I'm going to do a reading / clearing for them, like I'll spend an hour cleaning out my space and getting all my tools, you know, pristine and ready to go. And one of the things I absolutely always do is look for cords. And yes, sometimes they're attached to a chakra, but they can also be, like for me, a lot of my trauma was connected straight to my kidneys. So again, like in the physical world, when you've kind of beaten up your adrenals, it's now your kidneys that are trying to take over their job and the job of the adrenals. And I had just a tremendous amount of kidney pain for a long time because I literally had kind of wrecked them. I had I'd abused my organs in that way. And whenever, like a triggering would happen, which means there's a big onslaught of energy, whether it's emotional energy or, you know, this more metaphysical energy, man, it would always be my kidneys that took the hit. And sometimes they'd hurt so bad I couldn't stand up straight. Like, it was crazy. Wow. Happily, I've healed that. But part of what I have to do, like if my kidneys hurt at all, I'm like, oh man, I got to go clear quartz. I got to go clear, you know, whatever energy is like gumming up. So different people will carry stress in different parts of their body. And sometimes it's just naturally, you know, like a lot of people talk about like their lower back, you know, or their neck. Some people have an injury that may have healed, but still ends up being the thing that hurts whenever there is danger afoot. So all of these ways that you can pay attention to your body to think, gosh, maybe there's some chords. Also, if you've been out in the public space, I guarantee you have picked up. And now you're working with little kids, which is adorable, but you're going to have a lot of kiddie chords.
You know, and this is why, two things. This is why it's a good practice for me to get into. And I feel like kiddie chords necessarily won't be that hard to sever.
And also, they're harmless, you know?
Yeah. Some of them it's like, okay, well, I just want to keep it fresh because, you know, I want to make sure I'm providing for this kiddo the best that I can. But that also brings up, like, can chords from past lives carry over? Because you're mentioning injuries a lot. And I know injuries from past lives represent themselves in this life. So it seems like there might be a duality there.
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I feel like past lives, it's not so much chords as it is contracts, which so we'll talk about in, yeah, like it's more sophisticated. Like a chord is literally like you go to a movie and it's packed and everybody's really excited to be there. Those chords are still getting sent out. Or worse, you go to a movie where somebody is having a really hard time and they're crying and they're kind of like, you know, like having a fit and you start feeling really sad, you know, like that cord just came over and, you know, went right through your aura and attached itself. So, like empaths, it's a lot of cords, y'all. You know, like you're taking in a lot of people's energies. And this is just a great way to restabilize yourself. So it's your space and your energy. And it's so easy to also just ask yourself, like that little gauge, you know, the squirrel running up the tree, like how much of this energy is actually mine? Yep. And if it's only like, you know, 20 or 30%, you have some cords you need to clear for sure. So that's an easy, easy way. So not from past lives, but definitely from otherworldly critters for sure. Okay. For sure, for sure. I clear those all the time with my clients. Yes. Good question. Thank you. So clearing cords is really simple. You know, you get into a meditative state, and then literally you, I like to use Archangel Michael. Everybody has their own favorite, helpers that they like to use, but you don't actually need other helpers. I'm just lazy and I know that he's really good at it and really fast at it. But you can literally just like cut the cord, like, so if you can spot it, then, you know, in your mind you it's like you can pull it out of you, or you can just cut it along the, you know, basically the flesh, as close to the flesh as possible, or you could yank it out, like if you're feeling particularly feisty. But here's the big important thing is you need to fill back in, the spot wherever it was connecting with like divine golden light, because nature abhors a vacuum. And if you pull something out that had an energetic charge to it, then it's going to pull in. It's going to be looking to fill that place again with more energy. And then again, you're not in control of it. Like anything could end up walking in the door. So there you go. That's what I say about clearing it. I mean, it really is just that simple. And if you can't see them, if you're not at the point, that you can tell, you know, that there's a physical pain somewhere in your body, or if you can, you know, using your third eye, take a look, just have Archangel Michael or whoever come in and ask him to clear all cords. Also dousing, for those at home with the audio, I'm now showing my little dousing stone. You can also, you know, get it spinning and just say, hey, clearing all cords, contracts, equipment, machines across all time and space, across all planes of dimension. And it spins until all the cords are gone. And oh my gosh, it's spinning and spinning and spinning for me.
Wow.
I wonder how long it's been since I've cleared.
Trey didn't cut her cords before coming into the session, but today. Well, and I also wonder in terms of like filling those spots back in with the light that you're talking about. Is it just a meditative practice of just, you know, breathing and imagining the light coming back into you?
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, you can do it any way that works for you, you know, and whether you have that kind of imagination where you can really, really see it. Or if you just kind of need to say that it's happening and be like, it's happening because I said so.
So mote it be.
So mote it be. That's right. So in the witch practice, are you familiar with like clearing space in the same way? It may not be cords, but.
You know, definitely yes. And I feel like it's one of the things that I've been, you know, when it comes to clearing energy away, I feel like I struggle with that a little bit more. But when it comes to like wiping the slate of a space, I feel like I excel at that a little bit more, if that makes sense. And like, I don't understand necessarily the difference, but I feel like opening up the potential for something is something that's easier for me versus banishing something is something that's harder for me, if that makes sense, you know? And so, yeah, I definitely have practice with just like, I feel like I naturally do it as well. Like, you know, just clearing people's energy and clearing people's cords with it, helping them sever some cords or helping the space sever some cords. When it's not centered on myself, it's very easy for me to do, you know?
And that's a normal thing for healers. I keep saying it over and over again. Healers need healers because sometimes we just can't see it.
Yeah, we can't do it. Yeah.
Right on. So do you find like some of your tea magic helps with that? Or is that not even a tool that you need?
No, the tea magic's definitely a tool that I need, and I definitely think it helps when I do it. I've been leaning more towards the physical ailment side of things with tea magic recently, just because like tea does amazing stuff when your immune system is compromised or when you don't feel well. And so those have just been the easy, quick fixes. But when I, you know, for example, when I started my first day back with the kiddos, I actually just got this new, it's amazing. I wonder if I should go grab it. It's this new travel container and it's glass. And it has sacred geometry on it. And I found it at a thrift store. Has a tea infuser in it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And so I brought that on my first day back. And the tea magic that I made that day was actually pretty potent. And I can always tell when the tea magic is potent because it's not necessarily always the most pleasant tea. But like, you know, you kind of get
like
it
tastes bitter or something, or
it tastes strong. So yeah, okay. I would say bitter is part of it, but like it was just very leafy and very, you know, intuitive. And the thing about the the water bottle is you can't pull the tea diffuser out of it. Like you can, but like you'd have to do that before you leave the house. And I certainly did not that day. But yeah, so I'm getting better about using it, but I feel like tea and then sounds are the biggest thing for me that cut cords.
Ooh, okay. I have questions on both of those. So you said that the tea magic that you did for your first day at work, are you willing to share like what your intentions were around that?
Yeah. So I have, without delving into it too much, because you and I have talked about it, so you know what I'm talking about, but it is not something I'm willing to share for the podcast yet. I have uncovered a big piece of trauma in my life recently, and it's definitely taken up a lot of my energy. Dealing with it, dealing with the emotions, there's a lot of huge, buried deep layers that I've been trying to access within myself for a long time, and I now finally have access to them. And it's just dredging up a lot of emotion. And so my intention, my first day back with the kiddos was like, this first day with the kids can't be about any of that. Like I can't bring any of that energy into that. I have to just completely come with a clear head and a clear mind. And so it was very much about emotional soothing. So I had a lot of my comfort herbs with it, peppermint and rose. Lavender was in there as well, I believe. White willow bark, which is great for both physical and mental ailments. I use white willow bark pretty much constantly. And then ginkgo leaf for taste. And I think that was it. Oh, and some skullcap was in there as well. And it was just to kind of detox my system a little bit and to just have something you know, good to come into. And particularly with that kind of blend, it's very important you drink all of it. So I did, you know, keep returning back to the tea and make sure that I had it all in my system. And it worked pretty well because it was a very anxiety-inducing first day. And I don't know if I would have been able to handle it if I hadn't cleared myself a little bit beforehand.
Right on. Mm-hmm. Well, good for you, first off, Thank you. Knew to do that for yourself. And because sometimes we'll know that we're going into a stressful situation. Like, you know, I mean, what else is social media good for but to watch everybody either be like, I can't wait to see my family, or, oh no, I have to see my family for the holidays. Yeah. And then like watching all the different ways that they sort of prep themselves to, you know, have some of Jenny's like system clearing tea. And perhaps it won't be so arduous.
It helps.
And it's the same thing, like family, usually the cords that are most disruptive are the people that are closest to us. And and by that, I also mean like a boss, you know, and I don't mean that they're emotionally close to, just they have a lot of influence over like your daily existence, right? Sometimes those cords, like you can feel them if you know you're going to go see somebody, or, you know, it's Sunday night, you know, I have friends who just dread going to work on Monday. And I'm like, why don't you just clear the energy of your workspace? Or if there's a specific person that you're really, you know, not getting along with at work, like, why don't you just clear that energy? Why don't you like reset it and put a new intention in there that just says, you know, whatever you need it to say, that this person is no longer blah, 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 blah. Or I can rely upon myself to be my own best ally, or, you know, whatever it is that you need. And to take 10 minutes to sit down. And again, even if you can't imagine it, but just to say, I am officially clearing that space and I am taking ownership over that space. And it's this amazing thing that happens. Cause when you clear those cords, you clear that energy, like you did with the tea, you can literally feel the change in your body. Like the dread is gone. It's crazy effective.
Well, and that's kind of why I like tea a lot, is because I feel like it has similar properties to coffee. You know, when somebody wakes up and they're like, don't talk to me until I've had my coffee. You know, I feel like, you know, obviously the caffeine is there, but I also feel like there's an association with the hot drink, the taste and the bitterness of the coffee, the familiarity of whatever coffee you're using combined with the cream and the sugar. You know, it becomes your own ritual, and it becomes your own, this is what my body needs. And it's like the physical reminder for your body to change. You know, it's something you can breathe into. Yeah. And so that's why I really like teas, is because I feel like teas are just a lot less intrusive. And tea, you can have a lot more intention behind it. But it's the same thing of, you're tasting the properties of these leaves and these flowers. I have to have mine piping hot so that it kind of, you know, I feel it going down. You feel different afterwards. You can't help but not feel different. It's like taking a shower. Like, it just re-centers really well.
Right. You know, and you just mentioned like the, you know, taking a shower. So now I'm thinking about like the different ways, using sound, which I want to get back to. So whatever it is that responds for you out there, like do that. You know, I'll use Florida water, which is a scent based thing.
Yeah.
That's like a really super fast energy shifter. Like if I came back from some crazy busy event, like I will absolutely go to the Florida water right away just to get myself started to getting some of that other energy off. And it's just, I don't even care if it's a placebo, you guys. The point is that you're setting an intention that you don't want that energy or that attitude or, you know, whatever that vibe is interfering with you. So you're releasing it, you're getting rid of it.
Well, and what is the placebo effect besides just an energy shift, you know? So like, of course, that is probably what it is.
Yeah. It turns out humans can heal themselves. So like you said, like, you know, if you're given a pill and you're told it's going to do XYZ, or you use the Florida water, you drink some tea or you drink some coffee or whatever, you're told it's going to do this thing. Chances are your brain and your body is going to go ahead and do it anyway. Magic. Yep. Not magic, science. but you still actually have to do the work to set the intention and be like, I'm struggling with this person, or, oh my God, like, you know, this guy or this person, you know, dumped me and I can't stop thinking about them. And like, I want to, you know, it's 2 a.m. and I want to text them.
Yeah.
Like, this is a great way, like, clear your space, cut the cord, and chances are it'll buy you some time, if not a permanent solution, it'll buy you enough time that you can ease out of that fixation, or that worry or that need. So whenever, like, I have some family members that I always feel like I just want to do for them. And in a good way, right? You know, they struggle a little bit. I'm like, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And I have to stop myself, because if I operate from that instantly, then I will do things that are against my own good. I will spend money that I don't have. I will, like, make them the center of everything. And this is, I mean, this is really problematic in my life for years and years. Hi, CPTSD. This is a trauma response. Yeah. So what I've learned to do is, like, take a day. Take a day if you possibly can. If it's not like an, you know, I'm in an emergency room kind of thing, that obviously is different, but like, just give it a little time, give it a little space, do some clearing, you know, see if you can see it clearest as possible. And usually what ends up happening is, if I can take the charge out of my need to help, then when I do help, it's not an intrusion on them. It's not an intrusion on me, and I'm helping in the best possible way. So I get to do the thing that I really, really want to do, which is to help, but I'm not doing it in a way that messes their ride. Because that's another thing, right? Like, if you're throwing cords out and you're getting all up in their space, they have a hard time making decisions, and they're not completely in charge of the things that they end up doing because of all of this, you know, foreign energy. So there you go. That's the cord conversation, which leads us to soul contracts, which really doesn't have anything to do with this world, right? It's not sensory. It's extrasensory. So what is your understanding of soul contracts?
You know, similar things to cords, but more binding and more background, I guess, is just, you know, you have done something, or you've had something done to you, and you didn't quite work through it. You didn't quite clear that energy, and suddenly it's built and festered, and now you're having to deal with it in multiple lifetimes. Or it's an actual straight-up contract that you made with something, you know, that you agreed to, and it is more purposeful and intentional, or at least it was in the moment, but now you're still having to deal with it later on. But it's the stuff that binds, you know, like you said, soul contract, it literally binds to your soul, and you're literally carrying it over into the next lives.
Yep. And it doesn't matter what plane of existence you're on, or what timeline you're on, or what planet you're on. Like, so this is how, like, soul families kind of get built. They don't get built here in this realm, you guys. They get built in the etheric before you come into this life. Or at least that's my understanding of it. So y'all had a conversation about it, and it's like, you know, okay, these are, you know, we want to work together. And, you know, in this lifetime, by the way, there's a kid's book out there that a friend of mine showed me. And I'm like, I wish I'd seen this when I was a kid, that basically explains the relationship between abusers and abusees, or victims, I guess. And it's basically like this: there's something for you to learn through the abuse. So who in my soul family is going to volunteer to come into this life and abuse me? Who loves me enough that they will come in and be horrible to me so that I can learn this lesson, which, like, blew my mind when I heard this. Yeah. I never thought of it, that the worst of us are some of the people who are taking the biggest soul hits in this life because they are damaging themselves so that we can be damaged and learn. That sounds so messed up.
No, but, like, it ties back into the why would I choose this for myself kind of similar vibe, but more on the external side of it, and more on the interpersonal side of it. And that's a really interesting thing to think about, because, like, you know, it's that duality of I am who I am despite the trauma, and also the trauma helped me get here, you know, and, like, in no way am I grateful for the trauma, and in no way am I saying that the trauma made me who I am. But I can't discount the lessons that it taught me, And yeah, that's a very interesting thing to think about, because I also think that true enlightenment comes from letting go of all of that and letting go in a way that's not necessarily forgiveness, but it's moving on. And it makes sense that that would be tied to the people who hurt you in a loving kind of way.
And I think that's the scary thing about the, you know, evolution of a soul or of a human or whatever we want to call it, is if you, like, the, you know, time heals all wounds. Well, no, as a matter of fact, they don't. Number one, PTSD, that stuff is luggage. You will have that for the rest of your life. But also, soul contracts, if you don't resolve them or clear them, then that also, and this is some of the stuff that's actually causing the harm. Now, some soul contracts obviously are lovely and wonderful. Like when you see a family that just is in love with each other, you know, and the parents love each other, the parents love the kid, and the kid loves the parents, you're like, yay, that's a good functional soul contract over there. But unfortunately, most of the soul contracts end up being tied to these, you know, these deals, these traumas, these abuses that we took in an earlier life, and they just keep replaying and replaying, and it's so boring. Now, you've said that you know immediately when you meet somebody if they are part of your, like, a person that you're supposed to meet.
Yeah, and it's taken a while for me to trust that and foster that. And it's also taken me a while to sift through it, because, like, I will meet somebody and be like, oh my gosh, I feel super connected with this person. And when I do, it's still a choice where it's like, okay, if you pursue this, you absolutely can have a friendship or a relationship with this person, but I have to determine if that's right for me or not. So it's almost like I have open doors, you know, and I can be like, this is somebody that I'm drawn to. This is somebody that I can tell they're drawn to me. And I will know this usually before they know it about themselves. And so then it's like, well, I have to start feeding the relationship to get to that point, but then they need to feed it as well. And if they don't feed it, then it's not going to work.
And then you're like, okay, not this time or not this life, maybe next time.
Yeah, exactly. But it's usually a recognition of souls of, you seem more familiar to me than just this stranger that I'm just now meeting, you know? And I think it's because of how much I self-reflect and how much I reflect on other people's actions that I am able to see through those interactions, if that makes sense.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah. Cause you are so adept at that.
Thank you.
And you knew from early on that was, you know, that was a metaphysical, that was a psychic thing that you were doing, or was it just instinctual?
It was instinctual. I mean, I didn't know it was psychic, you know, like for you, for example, I was always looking forward to your class when I had you as a teacher, you know, and I was always very in tune with what you had to say. And even though it was early morning, it was very easy for me to pay attention to whatever you were saying. And just, you know, you'd suck me in right away. And then I would always like want your input about things, or want to have a one-on-one conversation with you, or be like, oh, you know, I want to ask Trey about this and this. And I didn't, because I was more in my shell at that point. But then, you know, there'd be moments of verification, like with you asking to call me Jenny, where it's like snaps me to attention and is like, see, this is something different that person's doing. This is important, you know, and the validation for me is the fact that you and I ended up having a podcast later on. So like,
well, first we had a friendship, you know, yeah, which was the validation. Yeah. And then this is just for fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is just us entertaining ourselves and hopefully a few other folks.
Yeah. But like, it's definitely instinctual. And I think because of how in tune with magical powers I am, I think it is psychic. But it's instinct first.
Right. Yeah. And there's so many wonderful things in there. So one of the things that, cause I do think that we all have that instinct that, you know, they're always talking about, like, but okay, but here's a flip thing. We're going to do an episode about like trauma and romance, but I also think that like, there's this component, like the soul contract component to it. But, so one of the things that they say, I have a number of friends in recovery, so addiction recovery, and this is the advice that they're given. If somebody feels comfortable to you and you can't wait to like see them on Friday night, don't do it. Mm-hmm. Because the comfortable part is the abuse or the trauma that just seems so like, I recognize that, you know, this is somebody that, you know, aligns with my systems. But until you've actually healed enough, you can't know it's going to be good for your systems, which is why they really, really ask people like in the first year or two of recovery, please don't date, because you have no idea like what is going to be right for you. And even though you see people all the time, like they meet in rehab and they're super, super bonded. Like imagine all of the energy that is flying and, you know, they think they're doing the right thing, but invariably it's because it was started at an energetic turning point, pivot point. It was a tool, but it wasn't the thing, right? It wasn't going to be for the rest of your life. Sorry, I just went, I think that might've been an asparagus, but we're going to roll with it. I'm on the opposite end. So my thing was always, it takes me 2 years to make a friend. And this is my trauma, because I can't tell if somebody is a good person. I can't tell if somebody actually likes me. I assume that they don't. They're just sort of tolerating me. So it will literally be somewhere around the 2 year mark where I'll be like, oh, I have a whole history with this person and they've never hurt me. And I have such goodwill towards them. I have a friend. So I can be friendly with people. And energetically, I try to be diligent to be friendly with good people. But the friendship thing is so much slower for me.
Well, and see, I want to put a caveat, because I would say it's the same for me, because just because I'm connected with somebody, because relationships are so, 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 so complex. And just because somebody's a good person and just because we get along doesn't mean this person is here to serve me. And not in a bad way, but just like maybe they are somebody who has taken that contract to abuse me in this life. And also, it takes me so long to stop unmasking around somebody. It takes me a lot more than the 3 month honeymoon phase. It takes me a lot longer than that. And the reality is I am bipolar. I have severe ADHD. I have severe CPTSD. So many things are going to come up in every single one of my relationships. And those things aren't going to come up until I've known somebody for at least a year and I'm comfortable with them. And it's then when those things start coming up and I see how we navigate those things together and I see what things come up for them that I start to understand this is a true friendship or this is maybe something that is a little more dangerous. And I've actually come into issues where I was masking with somebody a lot longer than the year, you know, and I just kept doing it and I didn't realize I was doing it. And it wasn't serving myself, you know, and then that relationship ends up being something that it shouldn't have been. And then it ends up hurting so, so, so much more when it inevitably blows up in my face. So I would still say the same for me, in that I've always made distinctions with friends where it's like, oh my gosh, I've known you for a year at this point. Like, I probably started to unmask around you a little bit more, and I've started to show my depressed sides and show my anxious sides a little bit more. And I feel like you've been navigating it okay, so I'm a little more comfortable with you. So I would still agree with you on that.
Explain masking for those who aren't so familiar with the term.
Please. When I first heard it, it was coined around neurodivergency. And, you know, when you're autistic or ADHD, you learn to act neurotypical and you learn to act how everybody else does. I think it's a lot more than just that. I think it's tied to emotions as well. And that there's this inner side of you that is constantly saying something or constantly feeling something. And you are tempering that. Or you are putting up a face or a show. You know, a lot of people have to mask when they're around their families because your family expects you to act a certain way. And so you're putting
up. Or they expect you to not act the way they want you to act, and therefore you're walking into a trap anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you have to put up a facade and you have to put on the face. When you're at work, you're absolutely masking, especially if you do a retail job. I'm sorry, you know, and that's something that I've actually had to learn with my kids when I at my job, is because we're all neurodivergent at this job, it is important for me to unmask the ADHD and autistic sides of myself and allow them to exist, because it creates a more comfortable space for these people who don't yet know how to mask. And we're not wanting them to mask, because it's not necessarily a healthy practice. You know, it's literally shaving off edges of yourself to fit into pieces. You know, if you think about the square peg into the round hole, it's literally cutting your peg to be round. So you fit into the hole, and the more you do it, the more damage it's going to have on yourself. I also think it's an extremely hard thing to unlearn. And that once you've learned to do it to survive and you've done it for a long time, you kind of just, it's a part of you for forever now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. All right. So another thing that we have in common, so I always joked that, I have an externally facing persona, and that's been the thing that allowed me to work, you know, at the studios and the corporate, you know, so in company situations where there's a lot of people and teams, lots and lots of teams and lots of meetings, you know. Inner trade doesn't know what to do with any of that. But boy, I can design a person who can, you know, ride that. And then as a teacher, that was closer to who I was, but I'm still teaching. I'm still like, you know, like you said, like trying to keep the attention of my students. And therefore it's a lot of energy work. It's a ton of energy work. So it's masking, but for hopefully a positive function. And I was just hanging out with some new people the other day, and, I don't know. I just decided just to say a lot of the things that are actually on my mind, as, because what I usually do is I just interview the heck out of you and I never say a word about myself. But for some reason I was comfortable enough with these people that I was talking more about like my thoughts and feelings. And it was a great conversation. And I knew that if I didn't contribute to the conversation, that it would be less than, right? It wasn't fair for just those two to be saying everything. But I got to tell you, I was up for 3 hours in the middle of the night with like a vulnerability hangover, because I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I showed so much of myself. The shame. Oh, the worry and the dread. Yay, trauma, so fun. Or neurodivergency. We don't know where that one came from. All of it. But to me, this is a sign of healing, right? So for both of us to be able to A, recognize that it's not always a needed coping mechanism, and then B, that we can choose the places where we think that it's going to be okay. And then, you know, like give it a test and see how it runs. And then if it goes sideways on us, we have these tools to like clear the energy and like reset things and then try again, right?
Yeah, I agree with
that's
that.
That's the thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One, it's all about recognition, like you said, and just looking in yourself and saying, why am I acting this way? And is it okay for me to be acting this way?
I've had friends for years who would say, you know, I like talkers. I like people who just are willing to share. And they would be like, you know, I've been talking for like an hour and a half, Trey, and you haven't said a single thing about yourself or your life. And I'd be like, oh, haven't I? I'd be like, I've been thinking a lot. You can't read my mind. So for my friends to actually point out, you know, and I have some friends that will make me speak about myself first in a conversation because I don't like it. And I would rather just listen to them, you know? And then, so I have good friends. I have really good friends who know my masking tendencies. Okay, so let's connect this back to, that was a total asparagus, y'all. We don't care, because that was
I think it was a good asparagus, though, because, like, you know, it connects to contracts really, really well of, like, you know, that soul recognition of, do I have a deeper connection with this person or not? And some people you just find yourself unmasking with, and you're like, what the heck is going on here? And, you know, you might have a contract with that person or that entity that you are carrying into this lifetime, because contracts aren't always bad, right? but
they're also not for a lifetime. They might be for a situation, you know, yeah, or a limited amount of time. Like, you're not going to be, you know, working with these kids until they're in college. You know, yeah, you're going to get a different set of kids every year. But this is part of your sole contract, is to work with these kids for this amount of time and to learn what you can, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, and for my job, it's actually, you know, we accept ages 3 to 10. So you can start at 3 and you age out at 10. So we could have a kid for 7 years, you know, and get really bonded with this kid, and then have to cut that contract and have to cut that cord. And it hurts so much more because you're like, I've known this child for years and years,
yeah,
you know, and I've seen them grow. And then it's like, well, bye. Have good luck out there.
Yeah, it's the same thing as a professor. Like, I'll work with students from their first semester until graduation, depending on, you know, what level of class or whatever. And I mean, the evolution in 3 years is astonishing. And, you know, and we know each other so yeah, well by then. And as a teacher, I'm like, oh my God, it's only in the second year that I get really good as your teacher, because now I know what you're trying to get done, you know, yeah, and how best and how well you work and how you don't work and like how to support that. But the bummer, of course, is at the end of that sole contract, all my students go off and have lives. And then I'm over there being like, can we have a beer sometime?
Yeah.
Like, I miss you. I miss my students. Like, I don't know. I felt kind of friendly with some of them, not all of them, obviously.
The joys of being a college professor, where it's actual adults that you're making a contract with, where it's like, I can't say to this 9-year-old, let's hang out sometime after this. Let's like, this is it.
That's it. Yeah, the letting go of things, right? So this is what's essential about soul contracts, is the understanding that not everything is meant to be for forever, that if it feels bad, it deserves to be looked at, it deserves to be adjusted. And I forget what the third thing was. So soul contracts, Jenny explained it beautifully. You had something with somebody early on. Sometimes it was like a partnership thing. Where like you're trading off, right? So soul families, you know, you guys are helping each other grow over the course of your eternal blah, blah, blah. But sometimes you have soul contracts with entities that are up to no good, that are all kinds of shenanigans. So some soul contracts, you stop the contract, you say, okay, I see what's going on here. It's not to either of our best, whatever. I'm going to break the contract, but you're still in my life. Like, you're still a sibling, or I'm still married to you, or, you know, whatever it is, you're still my child. So I'm going to reset the soul contract. I'm going to have new terms so that moving forward, you will no longer, you know, treat me like this. Like, energetically, it's going to do better, and we're going to do better for each other. So, and then some soul contracts, you just want to break them and send them on their way. So the way I usually tell people to do this, it's super simple. You go into your meditative state, and then you conjure up the violet flames of Saint Germain, if you need to attach it to somebody who's bringing the fire. Or blue flames are also really, really effective. You're just building a fire in front of you. And then you think about the contract or the relationship that you have. And I usually tell people, like, sticks are great, or scrolls that are kind of brittle that you can like break apart. The whole point is that you want to be able to snap them, you know, because you're breaking the contract. So whatever your brain kind of conjures. So you put thought into it. It's like, okay, this is the contract that, you know, I'm ending this contract. I don't want this entity attached to me anymore. And I don't want to see them again in the next life. They're not coming back. We're done. Or I'm breaking the contract because, you know, we're causing damage to each other, but I still love this person. So I'm going to reset the contract. And then you give the terms. Then you basically tell the universe, this is the way in which I am willing to continue on with a relationship with this person. And then once that intention is set, whether go away forever or start behaving in this better way. And by the way, this is not for manipulation. I don't think you can manipulate people. Like, you can't make people do things that are against you. You can't. Let me just say that a million times. You cannot force people to behave in ways that are contrary to their own best interests.
Right.
So you can't be like, well, you're just going to give me all your money. That's the new deal for the contract. Or, you know, or you're going to let me choose all the movies that we watch. You're going to give me the remote control, right? That's not the point. It's the idea that you're trying to improve the situation for both of you. So you clear the old energy, break, throw it in the fire. And then hopefully you don't have that trouble anymore. And again, you can usually feel in your body that like the tension point where you carried the tension for whatever that was, it's gone. It's just gone. And then you're not even thinking about it anymore. And you're like, it's a miracle.
That's such a beautiful way to put that. I really like that. Especially with the
And I know that your brain works differently. So I don't know if like the breaking the contract and throwing it into the blue flames works for you, or if you have something else that comes to you that you would...
That I want to try that first, and so I'll definitely follow up with you and let you know. But that seems easier and palpable to me. It seems like it makes sense to me, because I've definitely spent a lot of time building fires in my day. I know the process for that, and I can visualize it, and I can visualize like the snapping of a twig versus like the breaking of a tree branch and having to get your leg involved and snap it that way, you know.
It's some contract. I'm gonna need a big limb to represent this.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's delightful. Right on. So do go play with that and see, you know. And it's so funny because like the nuances of all of this, we could talk about it for forever, but the fixes are so simple. But you really do have to do it from like a place of sincerity, right? Like you have to really, you have to want it. So if you're on the fence about getting rid of like a romantic partner, just change the terms as opposed to breaking it, because the break might not happen. And then you're like, this doesn't work. This is BS. No, the energy that you brought to the party is the energy that you're going to get out of it. So clear intentions.
And I also think just like all of our, you know, simple fixes, just because they're simple doesn't mean it doesn't take practice and time, you know, and that you have to be comfortable doing this a lot and get to that point where you are doing it regularly before it's really going to start to work a lot. I feel like it'll work the first time probably, but like, you're not going to trust that it worked the first time until you've done it a few times, you know?
Yeah. This is true, right? Yeah. Just like lots of things, you're not necessarily going to be great at it right away. So the curse thing, this is easy, you guys. This does not need a lot of conversation around it. If you feel like you are being interfered with, you're having a run of bad luck, you're losing things. I don't know. Give me some suggestions of how you know that you're being messed with.
I feel like, you know, also just going back to the spirit gauge of like something happens and then you're like, how much of this energy is mine? It's always a really sobering moment when you're really upset and then you ask your spirit gauge, how much of this energy is mine? And you get a 20% back and you're like, oh, hold on. Something else is going on here. Whoa. Yeah. You're like, oh, suddenly this puts this whole breakdown into perspective. In fact, sometimes I've been choosing not to ask because I don't want to know the answer. I just want to deal with it myself.
That's fair.
But yeah, so, you know, losing stuff around the house all the time, not being able to get past certain hurdles in your life.
Yes.
You know, and not being able to accomplish certain tasks that you know you should be able to do. Or just, you know, ties to relationship. And I feel like it's easy to conflate curses and trauma. And I almost feel like they probably coexist because some curses cause trauma and vice versa. But yeah.
Yeah. So let's start there. That's perfect. So when you are in a depressive state, we say trauma a lot because we both have PTSD and CPTSD. So that's kind of our shorthand, but also recognizing people listening that you may not have PTSD, but you still have depression. You still have anxiety. Yeah. You still have, you know, issues. So when you're kind of in the throes of the worst of it, again, science, your vibration is lower, cause you just feel crappier. That's, you know, there you go. And then when the vibration is lower, it's easier for people of ill will, entities of ill will, to make attachments and start messing with you. And this was always a huge thing for me. It's like, I could not tell, am I being triggered? Is my PTSD running the show? Or have I stepped into something crappy and it's messing with me? And I was obsessed with this for years, and I'm still kind of obsessed with it. Now I'm less interested in what it is and more just like, can I get to the clearing of it? And the answer is kind of, because if I can see it, I can clear it. But sometimes I can't see it. And then I don't know what's going on, and things get worse and worse. And, you know, there'll be, like physical accidents, like suddenly you're breaking a toe and you're burning yourself in the kitchen. There can also be like your household can kind of be messed with. Well, now all of a sudden you have like plumbing problems in like three different rooms. Yeah. You have night terrors, if you're not usually prone to it, but all of a sudden you feel, you know, literally like you're waking up in the middle of the night feeling like you're being attacked in this plane or another. I mean, I feel like we all kind of know what what curses can do. What's important is for us to recognize that, gosh darn it, these things do exist. And whether or not it's somebody who's over there like building, you know, whatever thingies in order to, because every culture for thousands of years of guys, they all have curse mythology, curse, what would we call it?
Mythology, or, you know, curse stories.
It's baked into everything.
Yes.
There must be some truth to it, right?
Absolutely.
So you have people wearing like third eyes. I keep tons of stones around just to help clear things, tourmaline and obsidian. I keep things at my doorways, right, just to try to keep bad energy from coming in. But sometimes these curses can get to you on the soul level where it's not the physical plane at all.
Yep.
So I don't know, what do we want to say about this? First, you have to accept that you don't have to do anything. You don't have to accept that it's true, but you could just go ahead and say, I'm going to mess with it. I'm going to clear a curse today. I'm going to clear low energies today. I'm going to clear demonics today. And then go do it.
Well, and I feel like you say you don't have to accept it, but I feel like understanding that it's happening is a big thing, because knowledge is power, and not having that knowledge over the curse really gives it more power. You know, like the age-old tale of knowing the name of whatever entity is coming after you. I don't think you have to know its name, but I think the reason those exist, or like, not to bring up Harry Potter, but like, you know, he who shall not be named versus actually saying Voldemort, there's fear behind the lack of knowledge, and there's fear behind the mystery. And so if you can kind of unravel the mystery for yourself and accept, oh, this is a curse, this is happening to me. If you can't accept that it's a curse, you're not going to be able to clear the curse.
That's true. Or if you're willing to accept that there's somebody out there who could do something, and then it's their language that calls it a curse. Cause that happens all the time, where people know things are going sideways and there's no reason for it. Like, there's no reason. Sometimes you have bad luck, and sometimes it's just ridiculous. So to be willing to go to, I mean, for a lot of people, they go to, you know, the Catholic Church. If you have the bad luck to need an exorcist, like, that's sort of one end of things.
Yeah. That's the pinnacle.
But then there's, you know, then there's literally just doing mantras. Lots of religions have mantras to help do that. But sometimes it's so specific, you guys. And, you know, and there's jerks out there. Like, I had one person who had been cursed, and they were literally leeching off her magical energy. And that's a whole other episode.
Wow.
That can happen. You better believe it. And she actually moved to Europe, because she couldn't figure out how to create the energetic space. So she had to disappear herself until she could learn to kick these people who had cursed her out.
Wow.
That's one story. Lots of other stories. Sometimes it's a neighbor, you know, who's just a jerk, and you guys have a fight about their dog, like, you know, messing up your lawn or whatever it is. And all of a sudden you start noticing that, like, It's not just dogs now that are coming to your lawn all the time. It's like being dug up by chipmunk, not chipmunks. What are those called? The groundhogs, you know, or now you have a wasp nest, or you know, where things are sort of escalating. You're like, how nobody else has got this going on. Why do I? So if you can look around at other people and not find a commiserate situation,
Yep.
chances are you're being messed with. I have a friend whose family, they're all demonics. They're all demonics, man. And if she leaves that door open even a crack, they get in there, and pretty soon she's having accidents where she's wrecking her car, she's breaking a bone, she stops sleeping. Yeah, so there you go. So that's where this podcast gets on the more extreme of the woo side, and you've come with us this far. So, less easy to eradicate. I love using the dowser and just saying, please clear all negative entities and energies and transform into pure love. And swinging it clockwise for those who are at home and can't see this, and just clear, 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 clear. And look, it's going for a while. This means it needed to be done. Good job, Trey. So, even those of us who do a pretty good job, can still end up with a bunch of crap. And then the next thing I'll do is I'll say, if I'm thinking about like something specific, so I'm just going to do myself, please clear all negative spirit guides. And then you just swing it north, south, well, up and down, I guess I should say. And once that's done, then all the negative spirit guides that had been around me, and I knew there was a little bit because yesterday was a bad day. Okay, so the dowser stopped, which means all the negative stuff. By the way, I just performed an exorcism on myself. I just cleared out any curses and demonics, and then fill it back in. Remember, we were talking about that golden light, or resetting the boundaries, or what have you, or using the flame to cauterize. Please reset to my divine blueprint, and then swing it around the opposite direction. You can go into a meditative state, and you can ask Archangel Michael to come in and clear it, and he will take the, you know, he can break the curse, or he can take the entity back to God, or you know, back to its own dimension, whatever you want to call it, supreme being, source, blah blah blah, whatever you call it, and send it on its way. But always remember to fill yourself back in with what the way you want things to be. And there you go. Simple. Or if you're really struggling with that, come and find somebody who works in the space. Y'all, there's tons of us. This is not, you saw how easy it was. This is not complicated. This is confidence. This is saying, I've done it enough times. I'm not afraid. I can do this. I can do this on other people's behalf. And there you go. I think that's all I have to say. How about you?
I also just want to say, I feel like, you know, if the dowsing rod doesn't work for you, like when you were doing the dowsing, I was being called to try and find something else. 'Cause like the dowsing works a little bit for me, but I don't think it's my thing. I think it has to be something else, and I don't know what that something is. But like you know, thinking about Inception with the spinning top totem, just find something physical that you can do for yourself that takes physical action from your hands and has a visual representation, you know, and gives you both that physical and that visual, and use it that way. I feel like regardless of what it is, that will work, if you feel like it'll work for yourself. So I just
Love
encourage
it.
other listeners to just find their shtick. I don't know what mine is yet. I would like to say crocheting, but crocheting takes a number on my hands and does a number on me. And it's exhausting sometimes, so I don't want it to be that. So I'll find my thing.
Yeah, keep that for pleasure. And also, you want something that has a natural stopping point so that you can see, okay, that part of my clearing is complete. And then move on to the next piece. And I feel like with knitting, I don't know what the completion point would be.
It's ours. So,
Right. But that's a really good point. I also do want to mention, though, it took me like a year of steadily dowsing before I got confident and proficient at it. And now I just don't even think about it because it's hardwired into me. But again, like at the beginning, like I don't even know if it was working at all. I was just doing it to do it, hoping this is working. And now I absolutely know it does. Yeah.
That makes sense.
All right. So curses, same thing as hexes, same thing as, so when I do clearings, mass clearings, I'll clear curses, hexes, black magic. And you don't, and like, if you're, you know, if you are dowsing or whatever, and it's spinning and spinning and spinning, like, don't freak out. Like, guys, it's everywhere. This energy is everywhere. Being human means you're coming in contact with things that are not of light and love. Your job is to try to recognize when it's outside of you messing with you versus something that you're doing because of your childhood programming, for example.
Right.
And then bottom line, get rid of it. Clear it.
Yep. Yep. Just clear it out. And, you know, if it doesn't work, come back to it and try again. And if that doesn't work, find outside help.
That's right. Yeah. That's perfect. Try at least twice.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe even three times. And have some tea, by all means.
Yep.
Have some
tea. Yep. Yum, yum. But what a lovely conversation. Yeah, but it was really good. I feel like we definitely excelled into it more and more and then just started spitballing and rolling. And I think I'm going to have a really fun time editing this and figuring out what I'm okay cutting out, because I enjoyed all of this.
Me too.
So yeah, meow, meow. Thank you so much, Trey. What a wonderful thing to bring to the table.
Cheers. Meow, meow.
Cheers. Meow, meow.
All right. Have fun at work.
Thank you.